Today we're beginning the 10th month on the poem of the man God, and our theme today is Jesus meeting other disciples who will be his apostles. He already has a number, but today it's Judas Iscariot, Thomas, Simon called the Zealot, and different scenes that occur at this time. He returns to Nazareth, and he cures a blind man, a demoniac, and Peter's mother-in-law. And we're going to laugh when we hear of the difficulty Peter had with his mother-in-law and how she thought he was, well, he was a sluggard, he was lazy, and he was rough. And we'll get to that, though. But if you have your book with you, which I wish you would do, so many find it meaningful, we're beginning on page 289. First of all, to set the scene, Jesus is with his six disciples still in Jerusalem, and it's Passover. They're going to a country house situated in a large olive grove. As they approach, the owner, who seems to know John, this is John the Evangelist, says that there are two men waiting for the Lord in the kitchen. He mentions that there's another man covered with sores. He thinks he's a leper, waiting at the terrace wall, and Jesus decides to go to the sick man first. As he approaches him, the man shouts, "Go back, go back. Have mercy on me." He then uncovers the trunk of his body, revealing a mass of sores and deep wounds. And here I'm going to quote page 290, the bottom of the page, the last paragraph. So Jesus says to him, "Are you a leper? What do you want of me?" And the so-called leper says, "Don't curse me. Don't stone me. I've been told that the other evening you revealed yourself as the voice of God and the bearer of grace. I was also told that you gave assurance that by raising your sign, you will cure all diseases. Please raise it on me. I have come from the sepulchres over there. I crept like a snake amongst the bushes near the torrent to arrive here without being seen. I waited until evening before leaving because at dusk it is more difficult to see who I am. I dared. I found this man, the man of the house. He is good. He did not kill me. He only said, 'Wait over there near the little wall. Have mercy on me.' And as Jesus is going near him all by himself, because the six disciples and the landlord, as well as the two strangers, are far away and are evidently disgusted. So he adds, the leper, 'Don't come nearer, don't. I'm infected.' But Jesus proceeds. He looks at him so mercifully that the man starts crying and kneels down, almost touching the ground with his face, moaning, 'Your sign, your sign.' And Jesus says, 'It will be raised when it is time. But now I say to you, stand up, be healed. I want it. And be the sign in this town that must recognize me. Rise, I say, and do not sin, out of gratitude to God.' The man rises slowly. He seems to emerge from the long flowery grass as from a shroud, and is healed. He looks at himself in the last dim light of the day. He is healed, and he shouts, 'I am clean. Oh, what shall I do for you now?' And Jesus says, 'You must comply with the law. Go to the priest. Be good in future. Go.'" And with that, we have one of the early healings in leprosy. We're going to have others, and it's amazing how the change took place. In the theme we'll have next time, which will be April, I'm going over that because I have to have that already when I come back. I've never read a description of a leper like Maria Del Torta presented. In such detail, it kind of nauseates you just to read it, the way she describes it. And at any rate, he was completely changed. Now that is a miracle upon miracles. Bone is gone, tissue, flesh, all kinds of sores, and had to have that restored. It's multiple miracles are taking place at the same time. So now he tries to thank Jesus, and he throws himself at Jesus' feet, but does not touch him. Instead, he kisses his own hand. This is beautiful. He kisses his own hand and throws a kiss to Jesus and weeps with joy. Jesus now approaches the other two strangers, and he's saying, here I am, who are you? They reply that they heard him speak in the temple and want to follow him. By the way, those of you who weren't here last month, we covered the scene where Jesus really mercilessly beat the merchants in the temple. And so these two gentlemen were present for that, and Jesus spoke at that time and defended what he was doing. Jesus tests their intentions by telling them that the glory they seek in following him will not be found here on earth, but in heaven. They seem puzzled, and Jesus explains. So here I pick it up again on page 291, the second last paragraph. And he's saying, not everybody is able to arrive there, meaning heaven, because mammon lays more snares for those yearning for heaven than for the other. And only he who has strong willpower can resist. Why follow me? If to follow me implies a continual struggle against the enemy which is in us, against the hostile world and against the enemy who is Satan. And they reply, because that is the desire of our souls, which have been conquered by you. You are holy and powerful. We want to be your friends. So Jesus stares at the one who has been speaking all this time, and that is Judas of Cariot. Jesus listens to him, and Judas says, I am waiting for and dreaming of the King of the Jews. I heard you speak like a king. I saw your kingly gestures. Take me with you. Notice that and be aware of this as we go through this entire volume throughout these 3 years. That was Judas's big downfall. His concept of Jesus was an earthly king. And when he was being discredited and it seemed like he was going to lose out, then Judas fell away. We're picking up the conversation here again on page 292, about 8 lines from the top. After saying, take me with you, Jesus says, take you now, at once? No. Why not, Master? Because it is better to examine ourselves carefully before venturing on very steep roads. Notice, be aware, Jesus knew that Judas would be lost. But notice how he treats him. See, this, I watched this all through these 5 volumes. This woman could never have ventured through all those scenes and prepared a conversation that even defies theologians, that Jesus did not compromise his infinite knowledge, but bestowed on him every mercy and every help that could be given. Never betrayed the fact that he knew what the ultimate end would be. So we continue. Do you not believe I am sincere? Judas is saying. You have said it. See, Jesus says, I don't think you're sincere. I believe in your impulsiveness. That was one of his faults. But I do not believe in your perseverance. Think about it, Judas. I'm going away now, and I will be back for Pentecost. If you are in the temple, you will see me. Examine yourself and who you are. So then Jesus asks the other stranger, and who are you? And he answers that he too heard Jesus and would like to be with him, but now he's frightened after hearing Jesus' conversation. And Jesus encourages him, saying, fear may be an impediment, but it is a help when it comes from humility. Do not be afraid. Think about it too. And when I come back, the stranger answers, I am afraid of not being worthy. Nothing else. because I do not doubt my love. He then tells Jesus his name, Thomas of Didymus. Jesus then dismisses them and goes into the house for supper. The disciples notice that Jesus treated the two strangers differently and ask why, and so Jesus replies on page 292 and 3, at the bottom of the page. My friend, also the same impulsiveness may have a different taste and bring about a different effect. They both certainly had the same impulsiveness, but they were not the same in their purposes. And the one who appears less perfect is, in fact, more perfect, because he has no incentive to human glory. Judas, an earthly king, he thought he might be a prince. He loves me because he loves me, speaking of Thomas. And so do I, the other apostles now are saying, and I too, and I, and I, and I, they all affirm their loyalty. And Jesus says, I know you are for what you are. Are we therefore perfect? Jesus says, oh no. But like Thomas, you will become perfect if you persevere in your desire to love. Perfect, oh my friends, and who is perfect but God? You are, they say. I solemnly tell you that I am not perfect by myself if you think I am a prophet. No man is perfect, but I am perfect because he who is speaking to you is the Word of the Father. That's capital. Part of God. His thought that becomes Word. I have perfection in myself, and you must believe me to be such if you believe that I am the Word of the Father. And yet, see, my friends, I want to be called the Son of Man, because I lower myself, taking upon myself all the miseries of man, to bear them as my first scaffold, and cancel them after bearing them without suffering from them myself. What a burden, my friends! But I bear it with joy. It is a joy for me to bear it, because since I am the Son of Mankind, I will make mankind once again the child of God, as it was on the first day, meaning the creation of Adam and Eve. So the disciples continue a discussion with Jesus, and Peter says that he doesn't care for Judas. Notice, even from the beginning, even the apostles had an intuition about Judas's character. He was very well educated. He was educated in the temple with the Pharisees. And Peter says, he's a dandy young man. I prefer myself. They all laugh at Peter's humorous remark, and Jesus reminds them not to judge. Andrew asks why Jesus performed his first miracle at Cana, and then Jesus explains. So we pick up the conversation here on page 294, middle of the page, where Andrew says, and what about Cana? Cana, Jesus says, was to make my mother happy. Remember, we took that last month. We explained that. Cana is the advance due to my mother. She anticipates grace, meaning he did not intend to perform a miracle, but she advanced the time of that miracle because she asked. And out of love for her, he did so. Here I honor the holy city, meaning Our Lady, making her in public the starting point of my power as Messiah. But there at Cana, I paid honor to the Holy Mother of God, full of grace. The world received me through her. It is only fair that my first miracle in the world should be for her. And at that time, if you remember last month, he said, Mary is the key to miracles. So if you want a miracle, go to Our Lady. And she is doing that at Medjugorje, many of the shrines. Now there's a knock at the door, and Thomas rushes in, throws himself at Jesus' feet, and he says, Master, I cannot wait until you come back. Let me come with you. I am full of faults, but I have my love, My only real great treasure, it is yours. Let me come, Master. Jesus accepts him, and he says to the disciples, You are all blessed. You are more than relatives to me, because you are my children and my brother, not according to the blood that dies, but according to the will of God and to your spiritual wishes. I have no closer relatives than those who do the will of my Father, and you do it because you want what is good. And now we move on to the next chapter where Thomas becomes Jesus' disciple. And the scene there is Jesus and the disciples are still in the same place, namely a low, wide kitchen. And the landlord is there and Thomas. And Jesus had his hand on Thomas's head and says to him, Stand up, my friend. Have you had any supper yet? And Thomas says, No. He also tells Jesus that he left Judas Iscariot after walking with him for some distance. He felt compelled to come back and asked Jesus, quote, Please take me. Notice here what was happening. Jesus was pursuing him along the road, giving him thoughts. Remember, he's God. Don't forget that. And that comes across many times in the different things that he did. See? At the same time, there was divine knowledge, knowledge of the future, knowledge of all that's going to happen that day. And in view of that, he makes decisions. He walked in the olive grove for some time so as to get up courage to come to Jesus. Just then, a young man in the grove was suspicious of him and threatened him with a stick. He was the landlord's son who brought him to Jesus. Thomas points out that he's free to follow Jesus and is not obligated elsewhere, like a family or married. So Jesus takes him to stay with them, and Thomas is happy. The disciples gladly make room for Thomas, and Jesus takes the occasion to give them a lesson in charity. And we pick up that lesson here on page 296, the middle of the page. And he says there, You will always behave like that. Namely, when Thomas came, they were eating, and the disciples got up and made room for him and ministered to him. And so he says, My friends, according to the law of charity, a pilgrim is already protected by the law of God. But now, in my name, you must love him even more. When anyone asks you for some bread, a drop of water, or a shelter in the name of God, you must give it in the same name. And you will receive your reward from God. You must behave so with everybody, even with your enemies. And that is the new law. He's already, in other words, modifying the commandment. Love your neighbor as yourself. See? Up till now, you were told, love those who love you and hate your enemies. I say, love also those who hate you. Oh, if you only knew how much you will be loved by God, if you love as I'm telling you. And when anyone says, I want to be your companion in serving the true Lord God and following his Lamb, then he must be dearer to you than a brother by blood, because you will be joined by an eternal bond, the bond of Christ. And that is true in religious life. When we leave our families, we join another family. And these words exactly fit that. In other words, they take on another family. So now Jesus asks a favor of Thomas, which he gladly promises to fulfill. And he gives him a message to give the leper whom he had cured, who had gone back to the tombs. Where the leper stayed, if you remember the movie, was it Ben-Hur? And you saw the valley. It was very graphic. And they were called tombs because they usually died there. And he says, and he's telling this Thomas to say to the leper, the leper is to say to the people there, or rather to the leper himself in there, Come out, you, the one who was cleansed yesterday. I have been sent by Jesus of Nazareth, the Messiah of Israel, he who cleansed you. And then Jesus adds, Let the world of the living dead leave the world of the living dead. Know my name, let them throb with hope, and let those come to me who will have faith in addition to hope, that I may heal them. It is the first form of purity that I am bringing, the first form of the resurrection, of which I am the Lord. And Jesus asks Thomas to assist him in everything, that leper namely, and then bring the leper back after he's completely purified to a road along the river beyond a place called Doko and Ephraim, where Jesus will tell them how they are to serve him. Now, before leaving, Thomas asks about Judas Iscariot. Again, notice how Jesus is going to behave. Jesus says, "The advice I gave him still stands. Let him decide by himself, and let him take a long time." He's trying to discourage him. "Nay, avoid seeing him." During all this, Peter grumbles and looks unhappy. The reason is, Thomas is just a new member of the family, and Jesus is giving him all kinds of things to do. Peter feels left out. So he's discontented that Jesus did not ask him and the other disciples to help him, but rather a stranger like Thomas. Jesus smiles and goes slowly to Peter, and he says to him, and this is on page 298, second last paragraph on the page, up in the middle of the page there now. And he says, "Peter, Peter, you are a big old baby." and he smiles as he's saying that. And he says to Andrew, who is sitting beside his brother, "Go and take my seat." And he sits beside Peter, clasping his shoulders with his arm, and he speaks to him, holding him thus against his own shoulder. "Peter, you think I'm being unfair, but I'm not. On the contrary, it is a proof that I know what you are worth. Look, who needs proofs? He who is not yet certain. I knew you were so certain about me that I did not feel any need to give you evidence of my power. Proofs are required here in Jerusalem, where vices, irreligiousness, politics, and many worldly things dim souls to such an extent that they can no longer see the light passing by." And so we move down to the next paragraph. So Peter cheers up and he says, "Forgive me, Jesus." And Jesus said, "Yes, I forgive you, because your sulkiness is a sign of love." How about that? There's an insight. Wow. Sulkiness is a sign of love. By the way, there are many maxims, and I'm going through all five volumes and noting them down. When Jesus says something, it has to be true. So he continues, "But do not be envious anymore, Simon of Jonas. Do you know what the heart of your Jesus is? Have you ever seen the sea, the real sea? Have you? Well, my heart is bigger than the immense sea, and there is room for everybody, for the whole of mankind, and the smallest person has a place exactly as the greatest. And a sinner finds love just like an innocent. I am entrusting these with a mission." So Jesus now gives instructions to Thomas about recognizing the leper and helping him. And Maria del Torta mentions that she has advisors. And at this point she says her internal advisor told her that the leper's name is Simon Zealot, and that she would also see Judas Thaddeus coming down to Jesus with the leper. And with that, now we move on to the next chapter, and that's Judas of Alphaeus. He was a so-called cousin, not by blood, but by custom, with Jesus. And Thomas and Simon are accepted as disciples, three of them. So the scene here is, there are three wayfarers and are standing on a road near the Jordan in the middle of a bend in the road. They're anxiously scanning the road, waiting for someone. They were told by one of the disciples to wait 5 miles between Jericho and the town called Doko at the bend in the river. As they talk among themselves, Judas of Alphaeus shares with them his own relationship with Jesus. And he tells them that he had been a cousin to Jesus, and they lived close to each other in all the years that they lived in Nazareth. So that had to be 30 years. Judas speaks about the opposition of his family to Jesus' ministry and the neglect of his mother. We took that up last month, if you remember. And he also says that he has decided to follow Jesus in spite of his family's opposition. At this point, Thomas says that his father has given him his approval to follow Jesus. Now Simon sees Jesus coming down the road, and so they shout, "It's him, it's him." They start a fast walk. Their voices are full of joy and veneration. And Jesus says, "Peace be to you." Maria del Torte describes Jesus' voice as resonant, calm, expressive, clear, virile, sweet, incisive. I've never heard a voice described that way. She didn't say it was a baritone. Jesus is especially pleased to see Judas of Alphaeus. They embrace, and Judas is weeping. When Jesus asks why, he says that he came to him in spite of his family's refusal, and now wishes only to obey Jesus. When Jesus asks about his father's refusal, Judas says that he said to his father, "Father, I love you, but God is above you, and I will follow him." And Jesus approves of his reply. And on page 303, he adds this, top of the page, second paragraph. "Judas, my cousin and my friend, I tell you, you have made good progress on the way to light. Come, it is lawful to speak thus to a father when it is God who calls. There is nothing above God. Also, the laws of relationship cease. That is, they are raised to a dignity because with our tears we give our fathers and mothers a greater help and for something everlasting, not for a short time. Not for a short time in this world. We draw them with us to heaven and by sacrificing our affections to God. So, Judas, stay here. I am waiting for you, and I'm happy to have you, the friend of my life at Nazareth." And Judas is very touched by that. So next, it's the turn of the ex-leper who kneels at Jesus' feet. Jesus asks his name. He replies that it is Simon and that he has come from a powerful family. He reveals that his father did not live a good life and passed on his disease to his son, which was not leprosy, but was considered a kind of leprosy by the Israelites. His mother was dead and was a slave because his father had no children from his wife. Jesus now tells Simon that he is to follow him, and Simon also reveals that he was called Zealot because of the caste to which he belonged. So Jesus asks if he is learned, and Simon says that he is. Now notice that some of the apostles were learned, and that he had held a position among the important people of his caste. The disease he inherited from his father was called hereditary serpigo, which could only be passed on by procreation. He described his father as a squanderer, vicious, cruel, heartless, without any love, who deprived his son of everything, even the joy of being a father. And Jesus tells him, "As my follower, you will find father and children. The true father is smiling at you. There are no foundlings under my sign. It is a sign of love, and it gives love." And he invites both Judas and Simon to join him. They are losing that they are losing their father, he says, for my sake. I join you in the same destiny. And on page 304, he adds this, and it's the last two paragraphs. But now I will separate you. Simon, you will stay here with Thomas. You will prepare with him the way for my return. I will be back soon, and I want the people to be waiting for me. Tell the sick people that he who can cure their illnesses is about to come here. You can certainly tell them that. Tell those who are waiting that the Messiah is among his people. Tell the sinners that he who forgives has come to give them strength to rise. So the new disciples now are asked if they will be able to do what Jesus asked of them. And Jesus assures them that they will. He tells Thomas and Simon to say that he has come to grant you graces. Come here to see him. They were to report what they now know. Judas is sent back to Nazareth to prepare the way for Jesus' return there, and also to help break down the opposition to him. And then he tells Peter to go back to his fishing nets. Notice that. Peter was not accepted right away as a full disciple like some of the others. And Jesus will give the reason for that. And he says, because I will teach you slowly, and I will take you with me when I find that you are ready. With that, now we come to the next chapter. Jesus returned to Nazareth after the Passover with the six disciples. And the scene, Jesus and six of his disciples and his cousin Judas of Alphaeus are on top of a hill overlooking Nazareth. Jesus invites them to come and meet his mother. Then they go to their own homes. As they enter the village, they're greeted by the women, especially Jesus, and the children press around him to share their experiences. And they're saying, are you staying here now? I have a new baby sister. My brother Isaac got married. And Jesus listens, caresses them, praises, and he promises to help. When they reach the house, Our Lady is already at the door. And Mary says, son. And Jesus says, mother. They are in each other's arms. Being smaller, Mary leans her head on her son's chest, clasped in his arms, and Jesus kisses her blonde hair, and they enter the house. Mary is distressed because she heard from others what happened in the temple with the money changers, but Jesus reassures her in these words on page 306, towards the bottom of the page, and he says, you can see, mother, that I am well. I suffer no harm. God was glorified in his house. And she says, yes, I know, son of my heart. I know it was like the blare awaking the sleepers. And I am happy for the glory given to God. I am happy that this people of mine wakes to God. I am not reproaching you. I will not be a hindrance to you. I understand you, and I am happy. But I begot you, son. Mary is still clasped by Jesus' arms, and she has spoken holding her little open hand pressed against her son's chest, her head turned up toward him, her eyes shining with tears, ready to run down her cheeks. She is now silent, leaning her head on his chest. She looks like a gray turtle dove in her grayish dress, sheltered by two strong white wings, because Jesus still wears his white tunic and mantle. And Jesus simply says, mother, poor mother, dear mother. And he kisses her again. Again, notice these scenes. We might have imagined them, but could we have imagined them the way this is written? And how beautifully it's done. In different ways, all these little insights add up to a whole mass that you would say, this woman could never have done this by herself. And the accumulated knowledge here just amazes theologians and scholars. Now, after this, Jesus introduces Mary to the new disciples and tells her that Judas Alpheus is also one of the disciples. Mary is surprised because she knows what his father thinks about Jesus, and she's concerned that it's going to divide the family. But Jesus reassures her that one day there will be a change of heart in Judas's father. They then plan to prepare food for the disciples. Meanwhile, Judas Alpheus' mother rushes in to greet her son and Jesus. She's very happy to know that her son has joined Jesus' group of disciples. And she says, "I will be happy the day I know that they," meaning all her sons, "are all for Jesus. I feel that you, Jesus, are the wealth of my children." And after washing up in the garden, the disciples come into the kitchen where they're served sweet-smelling bread, olives, and cheese, and some red wine, which Jesus pours out for his friends. And he's the one who offers the food and hands things to them. So as the disciples become more relaxed, they speak about their experiences with Jesus, namely the trip to Jerusalem, the miracles that they witnessed, and their homes. They're filled with zeal and affection. And Peter tries now, notice how all through here, you'll notice how Peter finagles. And he goes to Our Lady. See, he knows how to get to Jesus. So he tries to persuade Mary to influence Jesus into taking him along on his mission. And Mary promises that he will not have to wait long before Jesus comes back to take him on his mission. Mary looks at Judas and the young John, the evangelist, and they look at her. She's reminded of earlier days when she had three pairs of eyes staring at her when she used to teach them. Now keep in mind, in the early days, Jesus had these two cousins that were part of that family, and Mary taught all three. And as she looks at John, she says, "I think that John is like Jesus, as Jesus was then, so fair and rosy, the youngest of them all." As the evening goes on, the disciples are anxious to hear more of the early days and stories, and Jesus now invites the disciples to bed down for the night in the workshop, while Judas goes home to his mother. And now Jesus and Mary are alone, sitting on a chest, each with one arm around the other's shoulder, and he's sharing with Mary about his recent journey, and Mary listens, blissful, anxious, and happy. So, how about some questions or your own insights on what we've taken so far? Yes?
I'm wondering about the real terms that you use, the word baby. Are they really used by the Lord, or is that just a virgin explaining?
No, she hears what's said, according to the revelations as they were described. She saw the scenes in three dimensions, like this room, in depth, beside the person, next to the person. She's hearing it. So when he called him a big baby, well, I guess he was a big baby, right? Well, don't forget that Jesus wasn't solemnly pronouncing edicts for all eternity all the time. There was family life and there was fun. Wasn't he like us in everything except sin? To have fun, is that sinful? No. Here's where we have to revise our so-called, our own image of Jesus that we've so-called constructed over the years. See? That's why this is so good. It kind of fleshes out so many things for us. It makes Jesus very attractive.
I think that's beautiful. I think we can imagine Jesus saying that certainly to me, because I think we all are big babies at times.
Well, it's true that, as some of the healers are saying, within each one of us there's a five-year-old child that has never been perfectly healed. So we go back to that stage where we need a mother, or we need a brother, or we need a father, and we need that kind of cuddling, or that kind of affection, and that kind of relationship.
It's gentle. It's not really a reprimand.
Yes. And you have to see what it was done. It was a smile. See? And he had his arm around Peter. Anyone else?
That other part where where the Lord was telling, where he was telling the Lord that his father had sinned. And he was saying he was very sinful.
That was Simon Zealot.
Simon Zealot. And he was saying because of his father's sin, he will not be a father. But the Lord performed so many good miracles, I was wondering, somewhere along the road, if he knew that he wanted to so much, he could not give him that.
Well, Jesus wanted him as an apostle and not to live a married life. In fact, three of them were married and they left their families afterward once they were finally selected as apostles. But it was with permission of their family. See, Jesus just didn't tear them away heartlessly.
This Judas, is that the same?
There are two Judases, Judas Thaddeus or the of Alphaeus and Judas Iscariot.
Is that Saint Jude?
Yes.
What I have gotten from this is when Jesus healed the leper and the Peter and Simon and Andrew stayed behind, they didn't want to go near him, kind of made me feel a little bit better about how I feel with people.
Jill, would you answer that phone? And maybe somebody asking about our day.
Okay.
Thank you. Excuse me.
It makes me understand a little more feelings, personal
I guess
feelings
it's not.
About people working with AIDS, people, patients, so
mm-hmm.
that it's not a sin to feel this way.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we can imagine how heartless people were towards lepers, but it was, they believed, communicable, but not as communicable as we thought. And but they had no hygiene in those days. Yeah, they have cures and prevention methods now. Mm-hmm. Any other question on what we've done here now? Let's not go too far afield. Yes.
Judas Iscariot. Now, he really had a chance to change, but our Lord knew that he wouldn't.
Here's what we call divine knowledge about all of us. God has a knowledge of all who will be saved and who will be lost, but it does not influence his behavior towards us. He gives all, every sign of mercy, assistance to salvation, whoever they are. No one can say, Lord, you predetermined me to be lost. That's Calvinism. Can you imagine a religion like that? That some are predetermined to hell. That's horrible. That's satanic. And yet there were some like that who believed in that kind of religion. Jill?
Well, is it possible for us to prevent somebody from going to hell, like one of our family members, if they're not willing? I mean, if they don't come around...
No, if you put the right word there, if they're not willing... Every person chooses his destiny. That was Jesus' final judgment on Judas. He said he chose his destiny. He had every help to choose Jesus and to follow him, but he failed countless times.
So if we're baptized, say our children are baptized and they made their confirmation and Holy Communion, but then they fall away. So if they don't make that choice to come back, then their salvation is lost?
Yes. They're not saved in spite of themselves. St. Augustine said, Jesus redeemed us without us, but he will not save us without us, meaning our free choice. But remember that free choice is possible up until the last second before you enter eternity. And very many souls maybe have been saved in that last second. Through the grace of what we call final penitence. And they were given a picture of their life, and Jesus or God gave them the grace of saying, My God, I'm sorry. And that's all God asked.
With those final words that you just stated, would that also be that if they were saved at that last moment, would they have to go to purgatory before they reach heaven? Or would
yes. Because they have not made a sufficient atonement for their sins. That's what purgatory is. That none of us know the time period.